Resonance 104.4 FM.
Letterboxd Big C show you what to do, and this is what he'll tell you. If you got a problem, to know who you are here now, this is what you do. Remember, you are me, I am you, all of us together.
Receive with simplicity all that happens to you, and welcome to the Naked Short Club on Resonance FM. I am Dr. Stew, your host. Now, this week's shock news is not that DSK aims to raise $2 billion for a hedge fund, since there's no shame in this game, but that Fed stress tests suggest that BOA, the knife, the morgue, and the giant vampire squid would suffer huge losses in a financial crisis. Quelle surprise! Aren't banks supposed to coin it while others suffer whenever there's a squeeze? Some say the system's diseased. A bank here, a hedge fund manager there, each week unveils fresh malfeasance. Markets rigged, products missold, Ponzi schemes revealed, and Wall Street's excess feeds Main Street's distress. But banks don't adulterate our food, rig drug trials or pollute the seas, and hedge funds don't rip off foreign aid or oppress minorities. In fact, they're a force for world peace. Just look at the effect of our recent additions in the world's hot spots: Kiev, Waziristan, Bangkok, Kigali, and now we're coming live from another hot spot, Club Bernie, the Côte d'Azur's hottest boîte in Monaco, jumping like the Vicks with Eurotrash, and Le Tout Moscow, turning tricks and flashing cash. We're here with expert hedgy guests, rich, ergo good people, to talk dirty about hedge funds, markets, the economy, and wider world. Now, while we get in a round of the local Pierre Madoff Ponzi, guests, tell me, how are you dressed?
We're naked, Dr. Stew.
Well, plutocrats, pert, or is it pervert, as you are, get dressed, and while we work out what to talk about, Mr. Chris Dixon, our master engineer, let's have some music.
Just look and see.
Welcome back to the Naked Short Club. That was the Velvet Underground sound of the Czech counter-revolution. Though, to be topical, we should play Julie London's Crimea River. Now, we're coming live from by the sea in Monaco with a swarm of locust hedgies. Gus Black, partner Deckard, Simon Fox, director Mercer, Richard Edwards, CEO, head capital, Guy Fraser Sampson, CIO, G10, the raw power of a law firm, a consultant, a money manager, a family office, plus of poetry from Pelle Cox. Now, Richard Edwards, cry me a river and tell us what's up.
Good evening, Dr. Stu. You mentioned DSK and a new hedge fund. Would that be the same DSK that used to run the IMF, the French political apparatchik who's against whom charges of coercing sex from a hotel maid were dropped not so long ago on the payment of allegedly a seven-figure sum? Would that be him?
Possibly the one who was allegedly behaving like a rotting chimpanzee.
So it would also be the same one who apparently took a young secretary on what he described as a date, although I can't imagine she volunteered all too well.
What, to a wildlife sanctuary?
No, I think it was a sex club.
Ah, okay. Nothing unusual about that in the corridors of power, perhaps.
Well, I think it is quite unusual, actually, Dr. Stu. And apparently one of his former girlfriends described him as half man, half pig. So is it the same fellow that's launching a hedge fund?
Well, I don't see pig and chimpanzee as going together necessarily. I mean,
but these are, of course, private matters, aren't they?
I mean, no, of course, and not like to be aired publicly like this to an audience of tens of thousands live.
A man like DSK relies on the discretion of the media, especially in France.
And also, Richard, I've heard nothing to liken his successor, Christine, to a chimpanzee or a pig. But anyway, carry on.
No, that's true. But of course, now he's stepping into our world, where manners are rather different, and misbehavior doesn't go unremarked at all. And so I'm thinking DSK. Of course, anybody who's anybody in France is known by their initials. We've seen it many times before. And DSK, I believe, might stand for denies nobbing servants. No? Or perhaps doesn't know shit. Would that be? Anyway, apparently he's very well qualified to launch a hedge fund, and I wish him the very best. And apparently he's doing it with his daughter. And maybe she knows something about markets, because, of course, as an enarch, he won't know anything about markets. But nonetheless, he will know lots and lots of people who might give him some money. I think it's called crony capitalism, is it not?
Well, there are those who say, probably incorrectly, that the current epicenter of that sort of thing is China, the very market which his new hedge fund purports to be focused on.
We'll see how it all plays out, but I think it's very good news for all of us, and it should add greatly to the gaiety of the hedge fund community. So
indeed.
Thank you for bringing it up.
And it's also interesting, Richard, a man of such erudition is clearly quite dyslexic. DKS is not the same as DSK. But anyway.
Well, I use the French order of the words, of course.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. And by the way, listeners, I should point out to you that this show is brought to you by our corporate sponsors, Madoff Premium Ponzi Beer. 150 years to brew and brood. Now, Simon Fox, moving on. When you've finished gulping yours, what's on your mind?
Hi, Dr. Stu. Well, I was thinking that Russia and Crimea might be a worthy topic of conversation tonight. But I was thinking about it more in the context of the implications for the end investors, for the big investors out there that have to make strategic calls on where and how they want to invest their money. Because the last few years we've seen this structural shift in asset allocations with long-term strategic asset allocations being made into the emerging markets, explicit exposures to reflect the importance that they have within the global economy. And that shift has largely been a beta play. It's been about trying to capture the long-term theme, and although there's been active management underneath it, it's been about a beta story. But given where we find ourselves today, Dr. Stu, with Russia, with Crimea, looking back into January, thinking about the fragile fives, then, you know, we're seeing increasing differentiation in the emerging markets. And I'm wondering whether now is the time for investors to start thinking about whether they need to nuance their exposures, whether they need to be more refined in the allocations that they make, and ultimately whether within this context we should be thinking about how hedge fund skill sets can be introduced into strategic emerging market exposures for the institutional investors.
Very good stuff. Simon, I'm sure that we'll be picking up on this later. In the meantime, hedgy listeners out there, it is time to share your travails and your cares on the Emergency Hedge Fund Helpline. Lines are now open on 1-800-DISTRESSED, and Bernie and the rest of the Switchboard team await your calls. And remember, I am Dr. Stu, and I am listening. So, anyway, Guy Fraser-Sampson, what have you been seeing?
Well, Dr. Stu, I think we're going to be talking quite a lot about emerging markets this evening. I was also going to raise the point that Simon just has, not just as regards the Crimea, and I think there's a whole different story there, perhaps, or different angle to the one most people are taking, but also that exposure to emerging markets in general, it seems to be very difficult to acquire decent representative beta coverage, and therefore we need to talk a little bit about how people play that particular game. But the other point I wanted to mention was the dreaded B word, which is bubble. I'm old enough to remember investing in 98-99, and I'm seeing a lot of things today that remind me of that era. We're seeing social media and networking sites being sold at very exaggerated valuations, and also a lot of the stock exchange growth in values around the world last year was due almost entirely to multiple expansion rather than to earnings growth. So I'm worried.
Okay, Dr. Stu is never worried because he believes in the ultimate triumph of pure alpha and free love. But again, good stuff. We will come back to this. So thanks for that, Guy. Now, unfortunately, this happens all too often on the Naked Short Club. Guests, that Madoff Ponzi beer is very, very strong, delicious as it is. So please slow it down. Now, while we get in... another round. Gus Black, what's happening?
Yes, well, I've got another dreaded B word for you, and that is Brussels, because all this talk about the real world of Crimea and so on, it's easy to forget about the legislative and regulatory Disneyland across the channel that continues to spew forth paper bilge. plenty of it over the last over the last few weeks. I normally talk about AIFMD, so I'm not going to talk about AIFMD today. Because,
does that mean we're not going to get like people who rely on reverse solicitation to get around it, or letterboxing, or any of that?
I object to use the term "get around it." okay. No. The AIFMD, of course, sort of regulates hedge funds in a more severe way than UCITS, which was a retail fund piece of legislation. So Brussels has had to sort of try and swing the pendulum back in the other direction and bring UCITS to a slightly more severe place. So we now have the legislation UCITS 5, including the bonus restrictions, but not the much feared bonus cap, thanks to a small handful of Portuguese, or were they Greek, fishermen. Plenty of legislation going on. But amidst all of that, despite all of that, you might say fundraising is up and fund launches are up. Let us not forget that still around a third of the capital committed to hedge funds comes out of Europe. And there's plenty of people out there shooting for it. Even the Church of England is in the news for increasing their allocations, saying that not all of the industry has devil's horns.
Whoa. Maybe that's something we can delve into later on when we're seeing how many angels dance on the various pinheads that you and the other guests have established. Anyway, thanks for that. Not the remotest idea what any of you are talking about. And maybe it is just too much too soon of the delicious products of our sponsors, Madoff Premium Ponzi Beer, the brew that puts its arm around your shoulder and says, don't worry, your taste buds are safe now. So please go easy, else no more for any of you. Though Dr. Stu will have some more in a minute. Now, Fabrice from Switchboard says that calls are flooding in to the Emergency Hedge Fund Helpline already. Quite a few callers who work in ops this week, which reminds me to remind listeners that we will be having one of our periodic ops specials next month. Exciting stuff, of course. Anyway, we have callers like a D. Positry from Dublin, and Adam Innistrator in Luxembourg, from Helsinki, a Custodian, and some private equity types always welcome, a Jenner Al Partner from Jeddah and his sister Limited, like all women there, or does this say oppressed? Can't read Bernie's handwriting. Also here there's one Reggie, or is that a regulator from Brussels? Maybe one of your friends, Gus. Anyway, keep those calls coming on 1-800-DISTRESSED. Dr. Stu is here to help, and actually so is Pelle Cox. So, Pelle, let's hear from you.
Hello. This is a poem written specially for the show about flight MH370. The Far Country. 1,200 miles off the coast of Australia, the fund of the lost. Make it speak back, that lost armour, that flat wing drowned like Icarus. Make it speak, this Antarctica, the man-made Rorschach of disaster. We watch for the inverted plea of that, like a failing lover falling for imagery. We seek it out for messages it cannot breathe, coders of the scream, its drifting solace and wing, brings back their peace for ours, their technologies. Now we are what we seek, the ellipsis of the gods, moved by winds.
Thanks, Pelle. Wonderful. Now, our engineer, Chris Dixon, has just passed me a note that I can understand that's come from Switchboard that says, Jenny Talmutilation. I have no idea what on earth this is about, but anyway, we will... I can't have any of this, not on this show, not in this country. I think, you know, that... This bad handwriting is just savage. Anyway, moving on. I just want to say, Pelle, thanks for that poem, which does speak to us here in Monaco, of going to www.resonancefm.com and making a secure donation to ensure the survival and continued growth of Resonance FM, this voice of radio art, the arts, the particular and the unexpected. Listeners, not-for-profit Resonance FM has nearly 3 million listeners worldwide and remains free to the ear, but this depends on grants and your donations. So if you value this ray of perennial ionospheric sunshine, go to the website, make a donation. Now, while we work out where to take what our guests have been talking about, let's get in another round. And Mr. Chris Dixon, our master engineer, let's have some more music. Welcome back to the Naked Short Club on Resonance FM. That was Noi, and I am Dr. Stu, your host, coming to you live from the Naked Short Club yacht in the marina at Monaco, watching the little people on dry land shamble by onshore taxpayers, and probably not rich enough to be virtuous. Now, let's get some more of that Have More made of Ponzi beer, but just halves for the guests, none of whom seem to be able to hold their Ponzi, except for Pelle. And let's pick up on our earlier discussion, starting with Guy. Let's go.
Well, Dr. Stu, I'd like to pick up on Simon's point earlier about emerging markets. Now, when it comes to strategic asset allocation, I'm a great fan of beta coverage if you can get it, if it's both accessible and representative. But we have a huge problem here when it comes to emerging markets, because if you look at something like the MSCI Emerging Market Index, it's heavily dominated by a few state-owned Chinese banks. And I'm sure those of us who want to pick up on a changing demographic, for example, like the growing middle class in Southeast Asia, that's really not terribly helpful. So I think I'd like to throw that back into the mix, that I do think this is an area where hedge fund strategies need to come to the fore.
It's interesting, isn't it, the dominance of China over the rest of the emerging markets, not just in terms of its influence in its hinterland, but in terms of sheer volume and size. There's been a great deal spoken about the stalling of the Chinese economic miracle over the last 6 months or so, and some of the arguments I think have been quite convincing. But of course, one of the strengths, perhaps the only strength, of a command economy, or let us say an economy over which the central government still maintains a great deal of control, is that they can take strong action when it's required, and the economy will respond. Now, that necessarily not necessarily going to result in benign outcomes. But when there's, let us say, a potential banking implosion or a liquidity crisis, then the Chinese government is in a very strong position and has shown its hand as being willing to take firm action when it's required. And so I wouldn't be surprised to see a reinflation of enthusiasm, if not the Chinese bubble. I'm not sure that there is a bubble, but some rekindling of enthusiasm based simply on central government action.
I was going to pick back up onto the point the guy was making. I think the challenge that I see it in terms of the hedge funds coming into the emerging market space, and I think there's clearly a skill set that they can provide that should be leveraged and can be leveraged more, is the way that they represent themselves. And it's the challenge that they have across the space at the moment in terms of what they're purporting to be in terms of skill and alpha versus what is something that's repeatable and sustainable and has an underlying driver to it. And I think the challenge moving from something that is purely beta dominated to something that is purely absolute in terms of context can leave investors very disappointed when they don't get the upside, even if it does protect on some of the downside. So how do you blend those two things? How do you get the underlying beta component plus the skill set the active managers can bring in terms of moving the money around to the opportunity set that emerges, and how can you do it in that long-term sustainable way is a real challenge. And I'm not sure the traditional houses yet have got there, although there's more that's being done in terms of blending EMD and EME in terms of mandates and those sorts of opportunity sets that they're trying to capture.
Yes, I think you're raising some very good points, Simon. It's worth remembering that while emerging markets are, I think, something like 35% of world GDP, they're only about 11% of market cap. And I think that points up one of the problems, that you have much more restricted free float, as it were, to play with in emerging markets. And as we know, in a lot of emerging markets, you can't have nearly the same freedom with derivative instruments that you do in some Western markets. So I've personally seen presentations from quite a few interesting long-only equity funds looking to play various aspects of the what you might call the Asian equation. But I think you're right. I think for hedge funds proper, it raises all sorts of challenges.
That's interesting, isn't it? So is it, in fact, even correct to describe people who can operate freely in those markets as hedge funds? Because it's actually rather hard to do any hedging. It's very hard to short. It's very hard to borrow things to sell or to construct derivative short positions. And so perhaps what we're seeing is that the emergence of a group of investment managers who are nimble and essentially just value investors, old-fashioned Benjamin Graham type value investors, those who can see a bargain and recognize it when they see it. Because I don't actually see much in the way of hedge fund type activity here.
You know, one aspect of this is an ongoing discussion that we have in the office about if you're a bright young thing leaving a bank with your modest bonus check, capped by CRD4, of course, where you would go in the world to start your hedge fund. It always used to be the case that we bent over backwards to try and keep people out of the US regulatory net if they didn't need to be within it. That has become virtually impossible now. You take a US dollar and you're in the US regulatory net, whether you've set foot on US soil or not. But the bizarre thing about it all is it's got to the point where actually going and properly hanging out your shingle on Fifth Avenue is actually a lighter regulatory burden, all things considered, than doing the same in Mayfair. When you take a step back, if you're just starting out in life, it's easier to get yourself registered and you're arguably subject to a sort of lesser burden once you are. But onto the emerging markets, there's all sorts of opportunities there if you are a truly fleet of foot fund manager without particular ties to the UK or anywhere else and are prepared to go and live somewhere a bit hotter and more humid and play the markets in those regions. You'll find lower tax, easier fund structures, quicker times to market and all sorts of other things which provide for a much lower drag on your returns than you might find elsewhere.
I sort of hadn't really intended this to become a descent into long only versus hedge funds, but interestingly, a lot of the arguments that we've had tonight have been similar arguments to the ones that have been put forward for things like diversified growth funds and the old-fashioned unconstrained type balance mandates. And I know they're dirty words in this environment, but ultimately we're talking about trying to capture the long-term market opportunities that are there, but in a very sophisticated and agile way, and capturing the alpha pieces that get thrown up along the way. And we're talking about regulatory environments. We've also talked about responsible investment, and the idea from an institutional perspective of being able to allocate to someone that can invest from a long-term perspective rather than trade in and out is clearly attractive. The growth in demand of people looking at environmental, social and governance factors, the UNPRI type drivers, have all forced the idea of responsible investment up the agenda on the long-only side. And it can only be a matter of time before it really fights its way through to the hedge fund landscape as well. Again, it just seems to be compressing the continuum between traditional and hedge fund landscapes.
Yes, you know, it's really interesting the way we keep kicking around these emerging market topics, and in particular talking about how to capture the alpha. One wonders about whether for a long-term investor, a more sort of, you know, for want of a hackneyed phrase, a global macro approach might not be more appropriate playing in things like currencies and interest rates. But another interesting point is that the London Business School publish, I think, as we all know, every year, a survey which goes back as far as possible to 1900, covering all major asset classes and all major economies. And what their results seem to be consistent with is that rather than looking at backing the economies which have done the best, you would actually do far better on a rolling three-year period to choose the economies which have done the worst. And over each three-year period, you would then do better in the relevant equity market. It's an interesting point, which I throw into the mix.
Does that mean that in 1917, you would have been busy investing in the Moscow Stock Index? Because you might have waited rather a long time for a result there.
Yeah, you might indeed.
Or Hungary, perhaps, in 1956. Or Cuba in 1958. Or North Korea now. All of which have done very badly at those times. Now, I'm sure that it's right nonetheless that it's simply commonsensical to buy when things are cheap. And I
grow tired of hearing that the single greatest determinant of a return on an investment is the price you pay to get in it, which is, if you like, a statement of the bleeding obvious. But it's nonetheless true. And so that begs the question, what's cheap now, does it not? So currently we have what might be the germ of a rather substantial conflagration happening in the eastern part of Europe as it borders Ukraine and Russia. So markets have been quite sanguine in the face of this. Every time Putin has said something reassuring, markets have rallied. In fact, in a couple of cases, have made new highs, and yet the tanks are still thickening on the borders between Russia and Ukraine. So any thoughts?
It's an interesting one, isn't it? I suppose if you were a global macro manager, it would be possible to construct a position where you went, I suppose, sort of short the Russian stock market and long US defense stocks. Yes. But I think the Crimean thing has been, I hesitate to say misunderstood, but perhaps misrepresented. I think, talking from my fairly superficial knowledge of Russian investors, but nonetheless some knowledge, in the light of prevailing public opinion in Russia, Putin is actually behaving in a very moderate fashion. He's probably doing as little as possible that that he can get away with without outraging Russian public opinion altogether. And that there's a very strong sense of history in Russia, particularly of what they still refer to as the Great Patriotic War. And there's a great sense that the Western Ukraine, of course, which is predominantly Catholic and predominantly pro-German, is perhaps a candidate for partition from Eastern Ukraine, which is predominantly Orthodox and predominantly pro-Russian.
Which would, of course, require ethnic cleansing, because there's very far from a clear dividing line down the middle of the country. And there are enclaves of both in both parts. But then, of course, ethnic cleansing worked very effectively prior to World War II and during World War II. We, of course, forget all that, the fact that there used to be large amounts of what are currently Poland that were Germany, and so on and so forth. Lots of little enclaves no longer exist. And then, of course, there's pretty much all of the Balkans, which experienced some unpleasantness recently, if I recall. But on the point of whether Putin has done what he could have done in order to justify his hard man, his tough man image. I mean, there was a magazine cover recently of him stripped to the waist sitting in the turret of a tank. But actually, that was a mocked-up photograph. He hasn't done that, which is actually rather out of character, because ordinarily you would expect it. He does, however, depend on being a tough guy for maintaining his approval from the Russian people, Freudian slip there. And and so it's hard to see any peaceful resolution if there's pushback from the Ukrainians. And so are we living in a fool's paradise? Is there some much greater conflict just about to erupt? Maybe just in the economic sphere. I mean, sanctions, after all, are being imposed, and there will be economic costs, not just on the Russians, but also on the people who impose those sanctions. Should we be selling short, do we think?
I wasn't sure from that conversation whether we should be investing as a value investor or a growth investor.
The prices haven't fallen yet.
One of the interesting things, I think, is that in terms of what we've seen in the emerging markets this year, and it's not just Russia and Ukraine, but the problems we've had earlier this year, is that the active managers haven't universally found it easy to make money. So we can talk about the theory and the opportunity set, and we can look back with hindsight and think that would have been good to have active management. And I think we should never underestimate the difficulty of predicting some of these things, certainly from an investment perspective, and the implications that has for long-term returns.
Okay, just to switch gear for the moment, because at the end of the day, I think most of you, and certainly this applies to me, are rich enough to ride out any crisis situation, whether it comes out of the markets or out of conflicting geopolitical interests. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter to us, but it might matter to a few listeners. And something that is pretty pressing and seen by many as onerous is the growing burden of regulation on the industry. Taking the AIFMD as a prime example of that, Gus, I was wondering whether, as someone who can actually spell the words, unlike Richard, who is smart but dyslexic, I don't buy that thing that he was doing DSK in French. Gus, I wonder whether we could go on to one of Dr. Stu's current favourite themes, which is, you know, the reverse solicitation notion so far as it's arisen. Would you like to take us through that in some detail?
Well, I'd like to put out a public service announcement calling all investors. If you are interested in allocating to hedge funds, you should be proactive in engaging with hedge fund managers because, well, let's look at the new world of registered marketing after AIFMD. So what AIFMD essentially does is it wraps the hedge fund world in a sort of retail layer of regulation, which is ostensibly at least designed to act as a sort of investor protection mechanism and of course, a regulatory information feeding mechanism. So the hedge fund managers wanting to actively market will have to not only make a whole load of disclosures to investors before, during and after their investment, but we'll have to make all sorts of disclosures to regulators. So private equity fund managers will have to tell regulators about how they're going to manage liquidity. That's not perhaps going to take very long for most private equity funds. But on the flip side, hedge funds are going to have to talk about all sorts of things that they will be doing in their portfolios. Begs all sorts of interesting questions like what regulators are going to do with all this transparency, who is going to help them process it, and what will they be doing with all of this information. So that is the world that you get into with registered marketing. Did I mention that you'd also be having to disclose your total compensation bill for the entire fund management operation and other such things as that? However, if your investors come to you rather than you going to them, you can cut through all of that and continue much as before. So hence the public service announcement. The principle behind the thing is that AIFMD does not regulate the marketing where the investor is approaching the hedge fund and saying, I would like to invest in you, where the investor is exercising their own initiative to make the allocation. So if that is the way you sell your funds, you can continue doing it. You do need to check local rules because the regulatory interpretation of what all of this means varies considerably country to country and regulator to regulator. But in principle, that's what you can do. And that's why I say allocators and investors, and many of them are doing this currently, are getting in touch with their managers saying, please don't take me off your mailing list. I am interested. I am sophisticated. And I'm very interested to hear what you have to say. And please keep telling me what you have to say.
And isn't it the case that in some countries that are intent on applying the new regs in a particularly strict way, like Germany, where, for example, they're trying to close down the whole private placement regime, you're still going to be able to get the message across to investors by being able to publish, for example, performance data fairly freely on databases, whereby people will have access to the information. They simply have to take the initiative to approach you.
Mm-hmm.
Or has Dr. Stu entirely misread that?
Well, therein lies several hours, if not days, months or years of analysis as to, well, what exactly does it mean for an investor to exercise their own initiative or to take the initiative? If they had a coffee with you 3 years ago, at which point you may or may not have mentioned that you might one day in the future be launching a hedge fund, does that scupper you from ever relying on reverse inquiry? If they read your data on a database that you had effectively published, does that scupper them, etc.? And that's where you do get into differences of interpretation. We're, of course, most concerned about differences of interpretation where they are actually voiced by regulators who will actually be enforcing the thing, as opposed to pundits and other market commentators giving their two penworth. But there is a sort of range of strictness to these things. What there mostly is, however, is deafening silence. And then you're left with actually having to exercise a judgment call. And I would say be reasonably pragmatic, but have your eyes open to the risks.
Well, this is fascinating stuff and very, very dear and close to Dr. Stu's heart. And I sort of feel like it's about time over the next couple months to have another of our extra special regulatory specials. We get more complaints from hedgy and private equity listeners about regs than about ops. Go figure, because this is the political economy of the industry. It's the surrounds that govern how it all functions. But there's no pleasing everyone. Not that we care, because we're so damned rich. Anyway, thank you for that. And Richard and Simon and Guy are with varying degrees of vigor jumping up and down like they want to intervene, but we have to keep to schedule because in not much more than 15, 16, 17 minutes, we're going to have the limos coming to pick us up to take us to our respective jets to take us back to our various tax havens. We're going to continue with our conversation shortly. I'm just going to... for sanity's sake, ask Pele to read to us again.
Thank you. This next poem is a poem about illicit love. I wrote it 10 years ago now, and the person who it's about has since died, so this is for him. The invention of the wheel. After we had done all those things in the car, and you went back to her, I leant my head back on the seat and dreamed there were no wheels. Dreamed this seat was just a chair and the car a room to keep you here.
Well, pretty good stuff, Pele. You certainly make a lot more sense than these hedgies here, all of whom, more in greed than fear, have totally overdone the Madoff Ponzi beer. Either they sober up or it's no more for any of you. Bad hedgies. But Pele, that was a good poem, so you, me and Chris Dixon will have some more. After all, who can resist the split-strike conversion taste of the products of our sponsors? Madoff Premium Ponzi Beer. Mm-mm, the Alpha Nectar. In the meantime, Mr. Chris Dixon, let's have some more music.
pressure, I blow my brain. I get so high, fall down again. What's happening, man? I gotta drink booze to help me swim, Belladonna to help me sing. I gotta smoke grass to help me see why you babe. Well, mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the biggest fool of all? Hallucinating freedom calls, what's freedom, babe?
Welcome back to the Naked Short Club. I am Dr. Stu, your host. That was Gong, and I am with these hedgies coming to you live from Monaco. Now, listeners, listen up. Resonance FM recently had a tremendously successful fundraising week, but it still really needs your support. To some ears, it is the best radio station in the world, but Resonance relies not on advertising, but on grants and your donations to keep the show on air. And do not assume that the cash needed just falls onto our head like so much manna from the sky or arrives by Kabbalistic magic. So, listeners, we really do need your hard cash money support. Go to the Resonance website on www.resonancefm.com. Make a secure donation. Now, let's round things up so far as we can. Now, Richard, very quickly.
Dr. Stu, very interesting, Gus, what you were saying about reverse solicitation, but I should point out that charges of reverse solicitation against DSK were dropped by the French prosecutors in relation to a Parisian sex club ring recently. So, clearing our hero to launch his hedge fund.
And good luck to him and all who sail on it. Simon.
Dr. Stu, I thought we should come back to a positive note because we've talked a lot about terrible things and challenges facing investors. And Guy mentioned earlier that last year we had this strange thing about sort of subdued growth but strong equity market returns. And as we start this year, that you know, you wonder where that's all going to go. But there should be a backdrop of better growth globally. But can the equity markets really move on from here? Point of optimism is that actually this should just be the perfect time for hedge funds to emerge into investor portfolios and deliver good returns. Correlations are breaking down. The divergences we've talked about in the emerging markets is a sort of microcosm for the divergences we're seeing across the world generally. And the ability for investors to be more flexible within that hedge fund structure should be the best place for people to go at this point.
Oh, I really hate it when we get optimistic. Perhaps I could drag us back into the slough of despond. You know, there's a great deal of academic research which suggests that financial crises are preceded usually by both overlax monetary policy on the point of central banks and asset price bubbles. And what we're seeing at the moment is all of these things in spades, as the Americans say. We've got asset price bubbles both in real estate and in quoted equities. We've got not just lax, but a ridiculous diarrhea of monetary policy by central banks, particularly the Bank of England. And just to comfort everybody a little bit more, we have the deputy governor of the Bank of England last week saying that if there was another banking crisis, it seemed most unlikely, even with the new regulatory regime as dreamt up by the Vickers Commission fairyland, that banks could in fact be saved. So I think grounds for optimism, certainly from a macro point of view, very few.
Kind of like those Fed stress tests we were alluding to earlier. But now I'm wondering about what about the progressive tapering that we're seeing, Richard?
Very interesting point, Dr. Stu. The Fed has been withdrawing gradually from its bond buying operation. It's known as tapering. The bond buying operation is called QE, quantitative easing. And so tapering of QE, which sounds like a most exotic maneuver, is well underway. The Fed has been buying $85 billion worth of bonds and mortgages a month, down to 75, down to 65, down to 55. Now, one of the things that you rarely hear mentioned is that the U.S. government's rate of issuance of new debt is roughly $85 billion a month. And so this has gone from the U.S. government issuing it with one hand and another organ of state buying it with the other hand. And so the fact that the Fed has, the fact that the Treasury has, the fact that the QE has been reduced in three steps so far has a much greater marginal effect. And so bonds have trembled a bit. They've fallen somewhat. Yields have gone up a little bit. Stocks perhaps have started
to tremble on the brink a little bit. It's quite easy to see, once the market digests the idea that, tapering really is here and is entrenched and will continue, that we will have a drop led by bonds, which will then also bring down stocks, which is, if I recall, exactly what happened in 1987. When nothing happened to stocks for a long time, bonds went down, went down, went down, went down, and yield, eventually the yield pressure was so great that the stock market broke, which of course then started a 30-year bull market in bonds, but nonetheless, that was from a much lower level. So I think that the scene is set for an immediate denouement of this potentially extremely hazardous situation. I mean, now, right now.
Yes, I would agree with that completely. I mean, I think the expression tapering is one of these political expressions that's just designed to disguise the truth, which is that central banks are intervening and creating unfair markets. And as long as you have central banks buying any amount of government bonds at all, they're creating an unfair market. And by definition, they are artificially lowering government's commercial, what should be proper commercial rates of borrowing.
Well, there have clearly been challenges in terms of the financial assets and the prices that they've reached at this point now. I think there's a separate question as to whether it's all going to collapse or be more of a fizzle through time. And I think you can see positive stories in terms of the underlying growth drivers to suggest that there should be a better ability to weather storms at this point in time. And the real issue is, how do you capture that and how do you be part of it, as opposed to being part of purely the financial bubbles that might go along with alongside that.
And now, thought for the day. Andreas Whittam Smith, the first Church Estates Commissioner, told the Financial Times, "It is ridiculous to think that all hedge funds are wicked. Not all have devil's horns, and we're not indiscriminate. Everything is run through our ethical investment advisory group, and hedge funds, unlike armaments, are not a banned category." I think we need to have a competition, answers on a postcard, to pen an extra verse of the hymn Jerusalem with references to short selling.
Very good.
So, and Richard, what do you say?
So not banned. So that makes us the boys in the not band, I suppose. On the subject of the bubble in bonds, I think that there's a different market term which fits the situation better, and it's more like a corner. And every so often, somebody tries to corner a market, whether it be the silver market or the cocoa market, two favorite categories, which candidates have come up time and time again. And the U.S. government's attempts to buy bonds and thereby lower yields and pump money into the economy have had some perverse unintended effects, like pumping up other asset prices, but also has had the effect of piling up an enormous supply of bonds in their hands. And eventually, when some as yet unforeseen circumstance obtains, that may have to find its way back onto the market. And all corners end in tears. A sharp run-up, a pause, a sharp breakdown.
Well, what a rounded bunch of guests you are. Now, listeners, please, please, please remember that the Naked Short Club is neither intended to advertise nor to promote anything, and you shouldn't try any of this at home, and certainly unless you're a qualified expert or professional investor, for goodness sake, do not invest your money without regulated professional advice. But nevertheless, Dr. Stu, as ever, is going to ask these plutocrats to share with us a simple question. Where would you put your money and why over the next 12 months? Let's start with you, Simon.
Given everything we've talked about from the macro perspective, I might favour something that's been out of favour for the last few years, which is the active currency space. They've had a pretty torrid time, but I think there should be some good opportunities emerging.
For long-term investors, and I stress long-term, my advice remains, I think, pretty consistent. I would go for globally diversified real estate and physical gold.
I would say corporate loans. I think that confidence in the markets are coming back, contrary to some of my fellow panelists, and the banks are not necessarily where they need to be.
Confidence can evaporate like the morning dew. I would say German real estate. I've been saying it for several years on your show. I still stick by this, but I now have a fresh candidate, and it's American gas assets, because everybody knows that fracking has produced a cornucopia of gas in America. But it is entirely probable that the American government will be constrained to use this as a foreign policy weapon by granting export licenses, just to wave a little warning finger at Mr. Putin, whose gas supplies much of Europe. And so the gap between American gas prices, which are very low, and world gas prices, which are very high, is likely to narrow.
Whoa. Well, it simply sounds like the world's going to hell. But then again, you're a really heavenly bunch of guests, so my thanks to you. Pelle Cox, Gus Black, Simon Fox, Guy Fraser-Sampson, Richard Edwards, hugest thanks as ever to Master Engineer Chris Dixon, also to all those callers with the courage to share, the people who've been flooding the Emergency Hedge Fund Helpline with calls for the last hour, and thanks to Bernie and the Switchboard team, and most of all to our corporate sponsors, Made of Ponzi Beer. Shame that we had to stop serving it to our hedgy guests. Really a bunch of lightweights. Now, listeners, next week you'll be excited to know that we're going to have our first ever agri-special looking at agricultural investment, a big growth area. They say that in 10 years' time, the Lamborghinis will be driven not by young hedge fund managers, but by young farmers. Anyway, leaving you with the sound of Test Transmissions. Till next time, just remember, doing as you'd be done by and loving kindness are all that really matter. The rest is just commentary.
You're listening to Resonance 104.4 FM. That was another installment in the fantastic, if not completely crazy, Naked Short Club. Coming next is the altogether more prosaic Daniel Ruiz Tizon, because he's available and he's coming next.
Listening to Resonance FM 104.4 London. Resonance FM 104.4 London's first radio art station.